Welcome back to Plot Pit, the show where we forge fiction from fact and folklore. William Atkinson in studio with
John LeMay.
And on the phone, we have Adrian Lopez. Hello, Adrian. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today?
I'm fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, we just got off of a great author interview, the previous episode from yesterday. Today, Adrian is back for one more session in the pit. John, what have you got for us?
It's our last session of the season, and we're going to go to Marfa, Texas.
Marfa, Texas, in the pit. We've got about 8 to 10 minutes worth of historical context and information, and then we're going to hash out some form of story from this.
Yeah.
Let's begin the descent. John, take it away.
So I bet more than a few listeners, when they heard me say Marfa, they automatically think we're going to tell a story about the lights. And, you know, we could throw the lights in there, but we're actually going to be talking more so about trains. But Will, do you know about the Marfa lights? Have you heard of those?
I've heard of the Marfa lights. Okay. I've not heard of the Marfa train, but instantly my head goes to Casey Jones.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. And Adrian, have you heard of the famous Marfa lights?
I'm assuming it's probably some UFO sighting or something, but I don't remember it by name.
Kind of, sort of. So the Marfa lights, they are technically UFOs because they're unidentified flying objects, but they're seen pretty much every night along a certain stretch of highway outside of Marfa near a certain mountain range. And they're tiny, so they wouldn't be like big UFOs per se, but sure, back in the 1800s, certain people probably thought they were witches in flight, because in old-timey folklore, witches would turn into balls of fire and float around in the air. Some people have even theorized that they are bioluminescent life forms that kind of flit around in the air, you know, and that would explain the glowing orbs of light that are flying around.
I think we hit on that just briefly with when Jesse Lawrence was on the show and we did Father Atmosphere.
Maybe
I think
so.
You mentioned the Marfa lights.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's what Marfa is famous for, is these, you know, Marfa lights that they definitely exist. You can go see them if you want, but nobody knows what they are. But like I said, we might play with those, we might not. What we're going to talk about today is a train accident from the 1920s. And this is a proto chapter from a book I'm working on, so I'm just going to kind of read from that. So in 1921 occurred a somewhat famous train accident in Paisano Pass, 12 miles east of Marfa. And, you know, as I said, due to the Marfa lights, and because this story also involves a mysterious man in black, some people have kind of called this a UFO story. I don't know if I'd agree or not, but it's definitely interesting. So, our story begins on the morning of July 8th, 1921. A train of the Southern Pacific Railroad, specifically engine number 745, was on its way from Sanderson, Texas to Valentine, Texas. At around 5 a.m., it was going through Paisano Pass when it suddenly came to a stop and the engine room exploded. The explosion propelled the engine car 200 yards from the main track, while the hefty boiler landed about 30 feet away. The force of the explosion even caused the tracks to bend under the stress. The body of the conductor, William Francis Bowman, was found badly burned and about 60 feet away from the train. Obviously, he did not survive. Oddly, the other man that was supposed to be in the injured car with Bowman was found about 4 miles away. But no, he didn't get blown there from the explosion. Nothing quite that wild. He was a firefighter named Charles F. Robinson. And again, you know, I think he was supposed to be in the boiler room. But what happened is he was found unconscious, as I said, long ways away, away from the accident. But we'll circle back to that. So, you know, while accidents like that did happen where a train boiler would just blow up, this one was odd because it was a brand new engine, just recently built. And the other strange thing was that in addition to being burned, the deceased Bowman, he had also had basically a clean hole right through his forehead. And so some have wondered, you know, did a tiny perfect projectile from the explosion do this, or did he perhaps get shot in the head? The latter case is much more likely. So according to newspaper reports of the time, his wound was eventually identified as that of a bullet wound. And as to the fireman, Robinson, although some people inaccurately reported him as being in the train car with Bowman, he was just supposed to be in there with him. What actually happened is Robinson explained to the press that the last thing he remembered was rolling a cigarette when they were stopped near the Toronto Flag Station. And, you know, he basically blacked out and woke up with a gash on the back of his head. So it seems, you know, pretty likely that someone came up and knocked him behind the head and just knocked him out and then threw him off the train and off they went. So he, you know, survived the accident just only because someone else knocked him out. So that a saboteur was at work was backed by the train's brakeman, Earl Sturman, who reported to the Bisbee Daily Review of July 9, 1921, that he had seen a tall, slender man in black run from the train and make off across the mountain a moment before the explosion occurred. The article reports that Texas Rangers were currently searching for the mystery man in black and continued that Robinson told the coroner both he and the engineer had noticed a man riding a few cars back from the engine, and they just basically thought it was a tramp stealing a ride and didn't pay any attention to him. Though officials puzzled over the motive of the crime, they at least suspected that it was done by someone familiar with the workings of a boiler room and a locomotive engine, as the injectors which supply water to the boiler had been cut off. And the story gets stranger still. Robinson, the fireman who miraculously survived, he later committed suicide, shooting himself in the head shortly before a hearing was held on the incident 10 days after it occurred. While this may point to his being a part of a conspiracy, others say that Robinson had simply suffered severe head trauma due to the incident. As it was, he had some swelling of the brain, which some speculate affected his mental state and led to his taking his own life. However, it's also possible that a conspirator involved in the incident may have only made it look like a suicide. In any case, you know, as we said, because the incident occurred in Paisano Pass, which was very close to the Marfa Lights. In fact, Paisano Pass was the first place where the Marfa Lights were ever observed back in the 1880s. You know, and because it involves a man in black, you know, some people are like, whoa, you got a man in black. You've got an area with quote-unquote UFOs and this weird accident. You know, I don't really know why a man in black would want to sabotage the train, but maybe that's something we can come up with in our fictional session.
Okay, so we are ending the fact portion, entering the fiction portion. Adrian, what are your first thoughts?
Well, listen to everything. I think this is a better one. Not necessarily. I would take this probably away from children's side and just do it like a regular thriller. Or I think it's really set up for a normal kind of like a heist story. You have the backstory of the lights and the men in black, but basically you explain that as a copycat type where they like to copy when there's something out there. So it's always blamed on that situation, right? So there is either just they want to sabotage the train or the train line and are using the lights and the men in black as the cover for it, because, you know, basically those are folklores or myths, again, that are out in the public that people know about. And they would absolutely start talking about that and not talk about what the actual thing that happened with the train would be. So I see this as the adult version of Scooby-Doo, where you're talking about supernatural, but it really is just maybe not a heist, because or we make it a heist. So there's something on the train, but that, you know, was valuable or wanted. But it could be simply, you know, there's a lot of, you know, when you look at old Westerns and stuff like that, there's a lot of, you know, fights or clashes between railroad lines, right? And maybe they wanted to stop this new line and another railroad family or whatever, it just wanted to shut it down. So they didn't have the track or the available line working.
So I'm liking that. And I'm also liking, you know, by 1921, not that we have to set the story then, but by 1921, you'd be in kind of an interesting period where the Wild West is dead, but you're still in an area where people are riding horses. Not everyone has a car yet. Not everyone has technology. So, I mean, maybe we are on the verge of kind of an interesting Twilight Western, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be something we play with. And something else I forgot to mention in the history portion is Marfa, nearby Marfa, at least, they think there could be buried treasures, specifically one from Emperor Maximilian from Mexico back in the 1860s when he was deposed and put out of power. He sent this procession up north, allegedly, that had gold coins, and some people for some reason think that they might have been hidden kind of in the Marfa area. So the reason why I bring that up is some people think that strange lights are actually signs of treasure, so that could be another one, just kind of throwing it out there.
Okay, going to the treasure with the strange lights connection, my head, I know I've done this a few times before, so apologize if I feel like a repeating record, but one of the other things that connects treasure and strange lights, and Adrian, you had mentioned in the previous episode, you can't have a rainbow without rain. Because of the content in the previous episode, I wasn't going to crack a joke, but my instant instinct in wanting was actually you can if you have a leprechaun and a pot of gold.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yep. So what we could have is a leprechaun in Marfa, Texas, and these strange lights are like the forming of the magical rainbow, but it doesn't have the moisture in the air actually condense. Okay. So I know it seems like maybe a little bit more young adult or child story-like, but you could have like that adult version of this leprechaun who is that, and we even kind of touched on this in one of the Alaska episodes early on in the show with Beverly and the Frost Giant Bone, where you've got this leprechaun who's just this grumpy old thing that wants to be left alone. He leaves Ireland and goes globetrotting. He lands over here in the American Wild West or whatever, in what he thought was the, so I'm going a little bit of a fantasy route on this, but what he thought was uninhabited land. And then a few hundred years later, here comes the railroad trying to blaze a track right over his hole in the ground, right? And so he's there. He's got the treasure. Maximilian came up. Now he's got a bunch of other treasure hunters floating around. Okay. Yeah. Maximilian?
I believe it's Emperor Maximilian, yeah.
Okay. And so now this grumpy leprechaun decides, okay, I'm just going to stop the beast. I'm going to blow up this concoction of iron horse steel or whatever, right? Yeah. So that was one thought that I had. The other I had, and I don't know if this would, certainly time period wise, I don't think it would fit, but you remember that classic tale, it wasn't a tale, it was actually something that actually happened in historical record, and is the horse and buggy with the rail, and they had that race, and the first time the horse won, but then the second time the train won?
I vaguely remember
this
that.
Is like long time ago in history class. Adrian, do you remember this at all?
It sounds familiar, but I don't remember all the details, but it does sound familiar. It's a little bit like the tortoise and the hare story. Kind of,
yeah. But this actually happened. Maybe it wasn't with the train, the steam engine, or the locomotive. Maybe it was with the automobile when it first came out. Mm-hmm. The horse and buggy versus the automobile. Maybe that's what it was. But they had this race of, like, how far you could get, or how long it would take you to get 5 miles or something, right? And you had the crowd that was, like, all raw horse and buggy, and then the modern science folks. My thought was you could have the angry racer on the horse who decides, okay, I'm going to take my revenge on this beast that beat me and killed my business. So those are kind of the two thoughts that I had. One's kind of a fantasy. The other's not quite a heist, although I think the heist makes far more sense.
Where my mind went with that is it's like the spirit of the West that hates the train because it's like the train connected the West and made it less wild or something. That's the only place my mind goes with that.
The one I was thinking is maybe tying all three together. I mean, I love the old angry leprechaun just in general. I think that's great. But what I was thinking in general is kind of tying the three together, right? So we're talking about this is just at the end or the twilight of the old West. But really, the Wild West carries through corporation style because those guys are always the Wild West even today in terms of takeovers and stuff on that side. So it could very simply be we tie it in where, yes, there is treasure in that area, right? Or there's supposed treasure in the area. And what does that mean? Is that makes that train line the most profitable or the most wanted? And what happens when you have a piece of land that's the most wanted or an area that's the most wanted? People are going to do anything they can to try to get that land away from you so they own it. So that opens up, maybe it's the heist of not what's on the train, but where the train goes through. And that would explain what the whole point of the thing was. Why did they want to sabotage this train? Is maybe to have that railroad lose that line or something like that. Because if you own that area, right, you own the train that goes to the area, essentially you're going to own the town that's built around that. If you own the town that's built around that, you're going to own basically the mines, the oil, whatever else comes around that town. So that was just a gigantic money bag of stuff that was going to come if you own that area.
Okay, and then that percolated my mind into a different direction of lore. So part of treasure hunting lore is you can have a quote-unquote treasure guardian, which is usually the spirit of a murdered man or a different group of people, and it then the spirit then guards the treasure. And believe it or not, Joseph Smith used to do this. He was a treasure hunter, and you would provide a blood offering to the treasure spirit. You could slay an animal, whatever, and that would appease the treasure guardian so you could dig up the treasure. So now I'm thinking, okay, these Marfa lights are a whole bunch of angry treasure guardians, and that's the spirits you see floating through the air. The evil man in black wants the treasure, and believe it or not, it was never about the train. And again, now we're in fictional territory. We are not talking about, just for legal reasons, we're not talking about the real people from the article. These are all fictional characters now. But so the man killed on the train, it was never about the train. It was just the conductor himself was special, and he had some sort of a bloodline tie to this treasure that they had to kill him to appease the treasure spirits that are up in the mountains. And so it was all about killing him, and it was never about the train. That's where my mind went for a twist.
I'm thinking that the three were all involved. You've got the conductor who was expelled from the exploding train. Mm-hmm. You have the mysterious man in black, or the slender man.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you've got the fireman in the boiler who ends up dead 10 days later or something, mm-hmm. you said. Okay. My thought is you've got a trio of gangsters or treasure hunters or whatever. Okay. And they don't know about the spirits and mm-hmm. the lore and the sacrifice that you have to do as a trio. Mm. But the Slender Man does.
Okay.
And the other two guys have a rap sheet. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're wanted. Okay. He's not. And so what he's done is he's brought them in on this heist and or gold digging treasure or whatever, right? And he's figured out where the location is and everything else. It runs right past the rail line. So they stop the train. So we tie in the Casey Jones thing where Casey Jones was a fantastic locomotive engineer, was able to get trains going faster than mm-hmm. and beat time or make up time or whatever, right? So kind of have you got this very experienced, very talented locomotive engineer who knows how to get the train ahead of schedule. They stop the train at the right spot. They load up this treasure from an old cave or something, right? And the lights are where the spirits get all angry because they haven't gotten their sacrifice yet.
Gotcha.
And the Slender Man, that's when he, you know, maybe going into it, he didn't realize, oh, well, you know, you got to actually have a sacrifice mm-hmm. or whatever. But now he sees all these angry lights and he's like, well, these two dudes have a rap sheet. So knock off the one with the boiler and get rid of the other one in the back end of the story.
Yeah, that ties it all together pretty good.
So, yeah, I like it. I like what you came up with. I originally, as you guys were talking about originally, I thought of the Slender Man or the Man in Black as like a golem character. You know how there's always something mm-hmm. that's built to get your enemies or something like that.
Yeah.
I thought of that initially, but I like the idea you're coming with. So if you really wanted to tie it in, because basically what the protectors are usually somebody that failed and you're cursed to protect them now because you lost. Mm. Right? You kind of switch spots. So it's similar to like, you know, which is not the same because it's a comedy, but if you look at Santa Claus, you know, he hurt Santa Claus, so he had to take the job over. It's basically the same. If you fail and you lose, that soul gets to rest and now you become the protector. Similar to like a ghostwriter kind of thing or something, right? So
yeah,
you could be tie it in where instead of multiple lights, there's two lights, there's two protectors. The third man, just like you say, knows the train line, knows about the treasure. Maybe he does know about the soul offering or a blood offering, and he brings the other two as the offering. Knowing that if he kills these two, they replace the other two, they get appeased, they get to go rest, and then these two guys are stuck as the new protectors. So that is his whole plan. Basically, he knows where the treasure's at, loads it on the train, stops it at the right moment, knocks out the fireman, which is the only one that would realize something was wrong with the engine, because that's his job, to really keep an eye on it. Knocks him out, thinks he kills him, but doesn't. Makes sure the thing explodes, kills the engineer. You know, he has a treasure. The two souls are basically said, okay, you know, we're even. You gave us two new souls a ticket, but that guy doesn't die. And that's what the suicide is. He has to make sure if he doesn't finish that, he's the second soul that gets offered.
Wow, that's really good. That tidied it all together very well.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Well, Adrian, why don't you summarize the story for us just before we hit the outro?
Okay, so basically we have a sort of a heist story going on in the twilight of the Old West. There was legend of lights that are around this mountain area where a train line's going through. An engineer, you know, history line of engineers knew how the trains worked, knew what to do, also knew that there was treasure in this area. So he came up with a plan of taking the treasure, and he knew of the story or the folklore of the souls that protected it, and he had to offer two souls. So he signed up two guys that had rap sheets that were cons that he knew nobody would miss, nobody would ask about, and came up with a plan to be able to take the not only the treasure, kind of seal all the evidence, but also appease the protector souls that were there. You know, comes up with a thing, knocks out the fireman who would be the one that would know something was going wrong with the engine, thinks he kills him because the guy does have a bad gash on his head, but doesn't. He makes sure that the engine explodes, killing the engineer. Treasure's all his. Nobody even knows it's on the back of the train. Everybody's paying attention to the deaths and the explosion. The two souls are like, you know, okay, we're even. You gave us two souls. We can go rest. Treasure is yours. The guy that he knocked out, which is the fireman, doesn't actually die. He was on the brink of death, but doesn't. He knows he's starting to recover, and the guy knows that if that guy doesn't die, he's the soul that needs to be offered. So he goes and makes it look like he commits suicide a couple of days later.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. That tells the full story start to finish in a very condensed form. Cool. All right. Well, folks, you've been on the show here with us. William Atkinson in studio with.
You've been on the Plot Pit Express.
The Plot Pit Express.
That's what it was.
PPE. All right. Adrian, thank you for your time today. We really appreciate it.
No problem. I had a lot of fun. I really appreciated doing this.
Excellent. Give us the socials for our listeners, please.
Again, the main one is Twitter, which is at Berzerker1971, which is B-E-R-Z-E-R-K-E-R. On there, you will find my website or my link tree to find everything else. I'm on every other social site, YouTube, Pinterest, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. It's all a variation of either AL Storytime LLC or AL Storytime, and you can find me on any of those.
Excellent. And you are writing a children's book. Why don't you give yourself a bit of a plug for that?
Yeah, the first book coming out is going to be Juliana's Bedtime Stories, again, which is in honor of my daughter who passed away during pregnancy. The first story in this series that I'm going to be doing is called The Camping Trip. It should be available. It might be available at the time when this podcast comes out. But as of today, it should be available within 2 to 3 weeks. So it's getting close. It's coming soon.
Excellent. Well, folks, hope you've really enjoyed this final episode of season one. We might have one more, John. Have to go back and think, but I think this okay. I think this is the last one. So a little bit of housekeeping, folks. We have the end of season one upon us. We are going to be doing some original content creation over the summer, including a short film, which may or may not involve elements from today's story.
Yeah.
John, You can catch us on YouTube. We are producing some of our older episodes. Plot Pit Classics are going out, and then also putting some readings out. So on YouTube at Plot Pit, you can catch us on Twitter. That's where we are most active. We have accounts basically across the board on many of the other social medias, including Facebook and Instagram. We will be starting a live Twitch stream soon. That will be occurring during the break, and then we'll be continuing that through the end of the year into season two of the podcast. Otherwise, you can join us on Discord, interact with some of the guests that we've had on the show, including Adrian. And if you ask nicely, they might give you spoilers, but I doubt it. Again, Adrian, thank you for your time today.
No problem. Can I mention one more thing? I forget something.
Oh, absolutely. Go for it.
On my website, if you sign up for my newsletter, I'm offering a backstory into the location of Juliana's first book. And then if you do sign up for the newsletter, I'm also going to pick one or two individuals that sign up to get a free copy of the book, the hardcover book. And if you want, I'll sign it as well, and I'll ship it to wherever you want on my cost.
All right, folks. Well, that's great. You have an opportunity for a giveaway. Why don't you run over to Adrian's website, alstorytimellc.com, and sign up for the newsletter. Anything else, Adrian?
No, that was it. I mean, I had a lot of fun. This was great.
Excellent. Well, we really appreciate your time today. It's been a blast. We've had great three episodes this week, and we've gone the gambit of fantasy to realism.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Okay, folks. John, I do believe that is it.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, for now, folks, goodbye from Roswell. Welcome back to Plot... Okay. All right, Will. Come on. Oh, no. I think we've had a long day, John.
Yeah, you're starting to remind me of Joaquin Phoenix and Joker.
Just a little
bit. He has his tick. He can't help.
Okay, here we go. Welcome back to Plot Pit. William Atkinson here in studio with...
John LeMay.
And on the phone, we have Adrian Lopez, one of the most popular and positive Twitters. I'm going to totally restart this one. I think I'm getting tired. Welcome back to Plot. Well, for now, folks, goodbye from Roswell.